This is Joseph L. Flatley, and you are listening to Failed State Update. I am recording this on January 17th, 2021. That would be, I don't know, week and a half after the Capitol riots or insurrection or whatever the hell you want to call it. And approximately 4 days after the second, record-breaking second impeachment of President Donald J. Trump. Donald John Trump. And for this episode, I'm going to do it in two parts. Right before the Capitol shit hit the fan, I had recorded a conversation with friend of the show and outstanding journalist and author and all-around great guy, Mark Jacobson. According to his bio on the Penguin Random House website, Mark Jacobson is a writer and journalist based in Brooklyn, New York. He is known for his explorations of the seamy side of urban life and for his offbeat and witty take on popular culture. Mark is a contributing editor at New York Magazine and a frequent contributor to The Village Voice, National Geographic, Natural History Magazine, Men's Journal, and other publications. Apparently this was written when The Village Voice existed. I got to know Mark because he did a great book on William Cooper called Pale Horse Rider, and I think if you don't know who Bill Cooper is, you're going to find out. But basically, he was kind of like a radio conspiracy journalist, kind of more serious and angrier than Art Bell, more intellectual and heady than Alex Jones. And he hated Alex Jones because Alex Jones basically ripped off his shtick, dumbed it down, and turned it into real money. William Cooper died in 2001. But not before creating this like amazing kind of alternate reality, alternate way of looking at the world that has influenced everyone from far right wing conspiracy theorists to hip hop artists. So I spoke to him. Mark's book came out on Cooper came out in 2018. And after it came out, I spoke to him about the book for my short-lived and criminally underheard podcast, Bad Ideas Department, that was on Ocelli.com. For the first part of this two-part episode, I'm going to replay my interview with Mark from 2018 or so. And then part two is going to be a conversation we had a couple weeks ago where we... Well, what kicked it off was a conversation we were kind of having over social media about Mel Lyman, who was a cult leader in the 60s and kind of got into acid fascism, cults, and, you know... Conversation just seems relevant today with the 45 cult having done so much damage in the White House. So we just kind of, the conversation just kind of spiraled out of control from there. But I think you'll enjoy it, so definitely stick around for part two. But before that, here is part one of my conversation with Mark Jacobson. Oh, you know, one of the reviews I read... might have been the Kirkus review. It was like basically saying that since you didn't like interrogate Cooper's claims enough, that it was somehow like pro conspiracy or dangerous somehow. And I just thought it was really absurd.
Yeah, actually. Well, thanks for missing the point. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter what you think of these ideas. I mean, you know, that's, maybe that matters to some people. I mean, and some of them are far more interesting than others. I mean, it's like conspiracy is like anything else. There's good conspiracy and bad conspiracy, like there's good comedies and bad comedies. But, you know, and I mean, it was just it was a character study of a guy who was, to me, kind of had a parallel life to the way the world was going, you know, in a strange way, you know, the American Republic for a real fleeting moment was on the same wavelength as William Cooper, you know, or he was on the same wavelength as America, and he saw something that some people that would write a review like that. I happen to remember that review, actually. There were several like that. So, like, you know, because it's so stupid. People are so stupid now. I mean, like, I don't know if you're a Trump voter or not, but he tends to bring out the worst in everybody. So this simplistic thinking is like, you know, and it's been kind of fascinating to me how the so-called left, which I don't know if that even exists, but I mean, the so-called left has as many conspiracy theories as the right, you know, and they just never, you know, was all considered to be like, you know, this was the standard knowledge. But I mean, climate change is definitely a real thing, but it's really kind of the way it's been handled. It's just sort of like the Book of Revelation for people that don't believe in the Book of Revelation. You know, it's like that kind of, you know, everybody has to have an apocalyptic story, and this is the one. So, you know, I don't know. I just feel like people are just not looking at they're just looking at ideas and words and stuff like that, and not really interested in the way people actually think, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely kind of like going back to that review, it seemed to kind of like the underlying message to me of that review, and this is something I see a lot in like Twitter and social media and people, you know, with capital I ideas. It's that like Bill Cooper's craziest ideas are not dangerous or, you know, or bad ideas because they're wrong. They're bad ideas because they, you know, will inflict damage on the Democratic Party.
It's possibly, well, yeah, I mean, that's the dumbest version of it, you know? I mean, like, he's a person that was really an extremist, like, his entire life, you know, to me. But, I mean, a lot of people are like that, you know? He just sort of carried it through to the, you know, the nth degree, which made him interesting enough to write a book about, you know?
If an adult can't read a book and that says, you know, that we have slave colonies on the moon or something, and make their own can't be trusted to make their own decision as to whether or not that's true, like, why are you even reading a book?
Well, also, I mean, you know, when John Lear tells you that there are like 500 million people living on the moon, and he looks, I mean, I was in his house when he's telling me this, right? So, like, I'm saying, well, how come like nobody else knows this? I mean, but what do I care? I mean, you know, he's an entertaining guy. He's, you know, and he'll be the first to tell you that you know, it's all a hypothesis. You know, it doesn't mean it's really true. I mean, you know, and what is the in the UFO world, you know, who's supposedly the standard of truth in that particular venue? I mean, you know, what's the conventional wisdom about UFOs? I mean, there isn't any. So, I mean, everybody's got their own ideas, you know, and some are more interesting than others. But, you know, how can you take a steadfast, you know, 2 and 2 is 4 all the time, right? You know, and when you believe that UFOs, and I believe in UFOs, but it doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not going to be able to prove it. Nobody's going to be able to prove it until they actually crash into the White House or whatever they do, you know, and then everybody sees it. I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I just feel that why aren't people allowed to use their imagination?
So was ufology Bill Cooper's first kind of foray into this alternative media world?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, well, Cooper, I mean, how I got interested in him is a kind of a long story, but I mean, the thing with him is, you know, he's basically from a military family, moves around. His mom is like this great hero in his life. You know, she's the best person on earth. His father, he hates him, you know, because he's... And I think Bill Cooper was kind of a fuck up because he was from a military family and they're all officers. Every single one of them is an officer, and, you know, and then eventually became officers in the Army Air Corps. His father was a light, what they call a light colonel, lieutenant colonel. And, you know, but he went in as an enlisted man, which I always wondered about. I never really could track it down. Like, why a guy from a family of all officers didn't become an officer. Now, I don't know what that is, but he winds up enlisting because he wanted to be in the Navy. Because he wanted to be in the Navy. I don't really know why, but he wanted to be in the Navy, but he got seasick, so he couldn't be in the Navy, so he went in the Air Force, and the first thing they do, at least according to him, is put him out watching. He's like more or less cleaning the atom bombs. he's got this. He writes about this in Behold the Pale Horse very effectively, I think. I mean, he's a really good writer. I mean, he's a smart. Bill Cooper is a very smart guy. I mean, and he is just, and you hear it on the radio show a lot, that he has a certain kind of insight into things that is really far and away, you know, if you want to put him up against any of these so-called competitors, you know, he's just completely in light years ahead of these people. So so you got this kind of apocalyptic thing, you know, going on because he's constantly can't get away from these atom bombs, you know, like the things that are going to blow up the entire Earth, you know. So he's got this existential problem about that he writes about, and it's pretty moving, you know. And then he finally gets in the Navy, and he wants to fight in the Vietnam War, so because that's what's going on then. So Cooper goes in there, and he's a gung-ho guy, and then when he gets sent to the front and becomes PT boat captain, he begins to notice that, well, things aren't quite the way they presented them, you know, back over on stateside, you know, and we're not really fighting for freedom. We're here, and we're basically, I'm not putting words in his mouth. I mean, he says it. I mean, you know, we're here, like, to subjugate these people, and this is their home, not ours, you know, and, like, then he basically becomes this Vietnam War veteran against the war. And this shatters his whole worldview. And he begins to understand that, like, well, you know, if the commanding officer, you're from a military family, and the commanding officer who would be identified with your father, you realize that everything they're telling you is a lie. This is a shattering experience, you know, that probably informed the rest of his life. And he gets out of the war, and he's got this, you know, nasty case of PTSD. And I have the documentation that he was in the VA hospital for this on at least two occasions, because I've got two different times he was in that I got the records for. So who knows how many times he was in, and he was an outpatient for a long time as well. And you know, this is something that it's not really here nor there, because a lot of people are in this situation. You know, they go to war and they don't take to it that well, especially these He-Man type guys, you know. So you think you're Clint Eastwood, and then you turn out, well, actually you're not, you know. It's scary and it's horrifying, and you killed somebody and they're trying to kill you, and it shakes you up forever. And, you know, so then he got back and he tried to live a normal life, but it wasn't working out, and he had at least five wives. I mean, there may be more, but I was able to track down five different marriages that he had. Bill Cooper's dream was to be a normal, regular family man in the American sense, sort of a Leave It to Beaver kind of existence that he never really was able to live when it was actually happening. He was trying to recreate this whole thing, and you know, and then he got interested in, well, he sort of, there's a dark period in the 1980s where he works for a bunch of colleges and he's trying to make a living. He's always pressed for money. That's very important to know, because he's constantly hard up for money. He doesn't have any. He's living in trailers and all kinds of stuff like that. And that I know for sure, because I spoke to a couple of his wives. So, and he's a drunk. He's definitely a drunk. He beats up his wives. They all leave him, at least according to them. I mean, I'm sure that people on the internet will argue with you for the rest of your life, telling you that he was really a wonderful guy, but his ex-wives seem to not believe that. So, you know, I don't know. You just got to go with the fact, go with what you hear. I'm not saying what's true or not. I'm just telling you what I heard. So, and then the saucer thing. He breaks into what happens basically is in the late 1980s, the flying saucer business, you know, like, it was a huge, I mean, anybody who's interested in this stuff knows the history of, like, UFOs. I mean, in the late 1940s and all through the 1950s, and when they made all those flying saucer movies and everything like that, That is a huge deal. I mean, that's a huge deal, flying saucers. And then the saucer thing kind of falls off the map. One of the main dichotomies of people that are interested in flying saucers is, like, the question is, are the people from outer space, are they good guys or are they bad guys? It's kind of like about your view of the unknown. Is the unknown good or bad? So Cooper is like a paranoid guy by now, and for all kinds of reasons. And Cooper falls in with what they call the dark side of UFO stuff. So the light, the idea of the light, these kind of spiritual masters, you know, the whole channeling thing and all that stuff like that. Those are the risen masters that mostly kind of cribbed out of like Madame Blavatsky's ideas. Those things are basically kind of like picked up from theosophy and stuff like that, that there are these risen masters and they're going to help us out and they're from outer space and, you know, whatever I don't know. I'm not trying to make fun of it. It's just something that people believe. And then there's the other people who believe that, you know, that whole basic, you know, the biggest articulation of it is in X-Files, more or less. I mean, X-Files is the popularization of all these nasty alien stories. The idea of, like, you know, they've infiltrated the government. That's the reason why Kennedy was killed, because he was going to blow the lid on the UFO thing. Well, Cooper and his guys, the people around him, were very instrumental in creating that whole X-Files scenario. In fact, Cooper was very angry at this guy, Chris Carter, the guy who created X-Files, because he totally ripped him off. And in fact, I talked to Chris Carter, and he admitted that he ripped off Cooper. He said, "Oh yeah, I read that."
But you know,
that was great. You know?
If Cooper's just, you know, revealing our history, you know, he didn't really rip Cooper off.
Well, I mean, if it's a fact, yeah, that's one thing. But I think I'd like to see the proof myself personally, you know. But before I'm going to buy into a lot of that kind of stuff, it doesn't mean I don't believe it. I'm just sort of agnostic about it, yeah. So, you know, and he does this, he comes in and he's really a great salesman, Cooper. I mean, he's very compelling. If you watch that speech that he gives at the MUFON convention in 1989, which is available online, it's very easy to get. It's kind of not a very good image, you know, it's kind of washed out. But it's a fucking great speech. I mean, you know, he's just like, it's probably his best, his most forceful speech. And he makes the big case about how the aliens are controlling, the U.S. government is in league with the aliens and all that kind of stuff that a lot of people do believe. And all the other flying saucer guys says, who the fuck, you know, all the other guys like Stanton Friedman, these people, they all hate Cooper because he sort of comes in and he becomes a big star right away. And they, you know, there's a lot of competition in those kind of like I used to work for the Village Voice in New York, you know, I don't know if you know that paper. Well, years ago, I think not the, you know, it's out of business now, but we used to always say that, like, well, the smaller the turf, the harder they fight to protect it. You know, so, which is like, you know, so there's a lot of jealousy and kind of stuff like that. So like everybody hates Cooper and they're after him. And in fact, Cooper is not really, he hasn't really gotten this thing together when he's doing the flying saucer stuff. And it's kind of, it's there's no doubt that he's just trying to make it. He's trying to get somewhere. I think that's before he really, you know, understands like what he really cares about. Because he drops it. You know, he comes up with this great idea, like, which I think is really one of his, I mean, if you look at him as a showman, if you want to think see him that way, it's a brilliant idea to say that, like, look, I used to believe this. Now I don't believe it. I realize it's not true. It's all bullshit. So that is a great move to, you know, because it shows that you're complete. You know, I think it's really true. I mean, he used to believe this stuff, and then he felt that it was all trick. It's just a kind of a misdirection thing. That then he got into the secret society stuff and all that other stuff. That he, because you're always looking for why. I mean, a guy like that, I mean, I think Bill Cooper is the kind of person. It's a really human trait to figure out, well, things are fucked up. Why are they fucked up? And, you know, you're trying to figure out, like, why things are a mess, you know, and why don't things work out? I mean, yeah, and Bill Cooper was, you know, you're looking for the evil in the system. And some people don't believe in evil, so, you know, they don't. That's not a problem for them. But for some people who do believe in evil, like myself, for instance, I think that, you know, trying to put your finger on what the evil component is. Is it the government? Is it the aliens from outer space? Is it these different things? Is it Donald Trump? You know, I mean, is it, what is it? You know, how do you categorize it? And that to me is like the thing that he really, that's the through story of Cooper. He's always looking for that reason why the world is not a wonderful place, which he wants it to be. He's an idealist. You know, he might have said a lot of bullshit. I mean,
a lot of BS,
untrue things. You know, but I mean, his sensual search, his main goal was an honest human response to a confused world, and I respect him for that, because that seems to be what you put on this planet to do, to figure out, like, you know, what's going on.
Yeah,
you know, at least try to.
His stuff, it's like a lot of it is kind of reductionist in the sense that it's like taking things, you know, like social ills or what he perceives as social ills and blaming them on, you know, secret societies or something, instead of like looking at the bigger picture, you know, instead of seeing maybe that things are a little more complicated than that, than social engineering. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, he's not a dull guy. He was a deep thinker, you know, like, and poetic at times.
He also turned out to be right a lot of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
So, to me, he's an interesting... I mean, you know, I hate to say this, but the idea of, you know, everybody's supposed to hate intellectuals because somehow they're like communists or something like that. I don't know what people think, but I mean, Bill Cooper is an intellectual. That's what he was. He was an intellectual. He was somebody who was interested in the life of the mind. He was interested in this kind of stuff. I mean, I don't know how, you know, the drinking thing and then the, you know, the whatever demons that eventually got to him, you know, and this word made it difficult, but that's really his main goal. He's an intellectual who's trying to figure stuff out. I mean, he may not be doing it in the way that most people that go to Harvard do it, but, you know, it's completely legitimate, you know, and I don't think that he should be put down just because he only went to community college, you know? I mean, it's just stupid, you know? I mean, I don't understand. Like, for instance, like most of the people, when I said this book was misunderstood, I mean, I live in Brooklyn, New York, you know? I'm a native New Yorker. I grew up in this city. I went to, you know, public schools. I have a certain kind of, my mother and my father was a New York City public school teacher. I have a certain orientation towards the way the public-private sector battle that goes on in this country that's always going to be there. And, you know, so I know people that most of the people I know might be called liberals, right? But I don't agree with almost hardly anything they say these days, because I feel that they're just like, you know, they're not trying to think outside the box. They're just like, they learn certain stuff in college and they just keep repeating it to themselves. So when I said I was working on a book about a guy like Bill Cooper, who was, you know, most people don't want to, you know, I never heard of him. Who is he? But I've written a lot of books. So like, and I said, well, he was this guy, his radio show. And he said, he sounds like a right winger. I said, well, who cares? I mean, you know, right wingers are people too. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm a journalist, man. I'm here to, you know, I'm not a polemicist. I'm not here to, like, you know, not even care what half the people in the country do just because they vote for the Republican Party. I mean, you know, that's not my orientation, you know. So, and a lot of people didn't read the book. You know, people that would always read my stuff, they just stayed away from it. They didn't want to have anything to do with it.
In your estimation, is that a new thing or a kind of more pronounced thing these days, just the idea that some idea or subject is so toxic that we're not going to touch it?
Yeah, I think it, well, you never really can make a comment like that because you don't really understand, like, you know, back in World War One, the country was just as polarized as it, you know, after, before and after World War One, the country was as polarized as it is now over very similar issues like immigration and stuff like that. And, you know, in 1924, they passed all these immigration laws that basically, you know, Trump had a wet dream. He would never come up with anything like that, you know? So, I mean, these things are far more beyond building a stupid wall. I mean, you know, so this, or this is part of the country, you know? So, you know, history repeats itself a lot of the times.
I guess my question was more like your, like in your career, have you, are you experiencing
in
that
my
more
career,
now?
In my career. Oh yeah. I mean, well, I mean, I've been a journalist. I published my first article in any newspaper in 1970 or something like that. So I've been around this. I mean, I lived through the print generation. I mean, it was great. I mean, writing for magazines and writing books and stuff like that, you know, before the internet, that was one whole other thing. Now, since the internet is invented, you know, everything is different. It really, it's like almost like the ship left the port, you know, and you were still on the land, you know, so, and you go, what the fuck is this? Excuse me. But I mean, like, it's a real thing. And I think that I think this is, we're in a period now, which is kind of weird, because the human brain can't really keep up with the tech things. I mean, the tech is going faster than your brain's ability to, like, you know, get used to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think people are reacting in a kind of, like, you know, black and white kind of binary way because they're just trying to keep up. And it's we're in a, I would say, in answer to your question, I would say that sophisticated thinking is really kind of like at a premium these days. I mean, you don't really get in-depth ideas and stuff like that. I mean, where, like, you know, people are trying to go beyond just the, I mean, it sounds stupid to say that beyond the soundbite or something like that, because it's just like, but it's more deep than that. It's kind of like, you know, it's like this kind of sense that, you know, I got to say something and I got to say it really loud. And you know, if you're not really, if that's not the world that you grew up in, and that's not how you formulated the way you look at the world, I mean, it's hard to adjust to that. I mean, I find myself, you know, I'm kind of clueless. I mean, I've been doing this for 50 years, and suddenly I don't know what's going on. You know, it's kind of a new experience. It's not necessarily bad, because it's always good to adjust to new circumstances. But you know, I think that Cooper kind of like is a kind of prescient guy on that. You know, this kind of sense of doing his radio show where, I mean, it's really a hippie, right? You know, people don't really understand this. I think he was half a hippie, Bill Cooper. Yeah, he didn't smoke pot. I think he did smoke pot, but, you know, but he would never talk about it because it would make him look bad or something like that. But he has this real... the way his radio shows are constructed, which I think some of those radio shows are masterpieces. I mean,
absolutely.
He's not on all the time, you know, because how can you be? But and also, if you look at that long list of, I mean, you're familiar with that part with the Complete Cooper where they list all the shows.
Yeah.
That he did, and that's all the work of Doyle Shamley. Doyle Shamley, basically, I mean, the people bitch about Doyle, but Doyle is the person who kept Bill Cooper's legacy alive. He's the one that went through all the trouble of getting those shows and putting and transferring them. And, you know, Cooper was not really the best housekeeper around, you know, so some of these tapes were, you know, he said they were encrusted with peanut butter and shit like that. I mean, you know. So, you know, he puts all that stuff up there, and then there are, like, these long periods where he doesn't do a show or there's a lot of repeats or something like that. That was basically because Cooper was on a bender, you know? So, you know, this is what the source tells me, you know, I wasn't there. I don't know for sure. And people that are going to get real And people write me all these letters and say, Bill Cooper never touched a drink in his life. I'm saying, you can listen to the shows. He's clearly plowed.
Hammered,
I
mean, yeah.
You know, I mean, I say that's bad, but I mean, that's the truth, you know. I mean, anybody who knows what a drunken guy sounds like, you know, knows that he was plowed. I mean, it didn't seem to affect his performance, so who cares? You know,
I remember I was listening to that, you know, I guess I was 18 or 17, just the last year of high school. And it was a big deal to like stay up till midnight and like have this like shortwave radio that I built because
you built a shortwave radio?
Well, like, I took an FM radio and like followed some directions. Somebody told me to like make it pick up shortwave, but then like you couldn't tell what channel you were on, so you had to like slowly scan looking out for it. And then like, you know, and then midnight, it was always very disappointing if the signal didn't come in or if it came in and it was a repeat or, you know.
Yeah, but everybody says that stuff is in the book because everybody is basically said what you just said, and it was kind of great when it came in. It was like a gift, right? You know, like here it was. It was going to work. You know, I get to hear Bill Cooper tonight. I think that has a lot to do with what you're talking about. I mean, the thing is that like there was a value in the sense of like Cooper has this fantastic little he goes on all these riffs, you know, and some are better than others, but the one about how he opens up his car and he used to love to tune his own car up and make him run a little rich the way he liked, and now he opens up his car and he can't even figure out what's underneath it. I mean, what's underneath the hood? I mean, that is really, you know, number one, one of the things that Bill Cooper is very poignant about is like the lack of the decline of the masculine, you know, dominance of the society, which is definitely happening. You know, I mean, you'd have to be blind not to see this. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but I mean, you know, there was a sense of like, you know, the man took care of his own car and he did this kind of thing and that kind of stuff. But I grew up in that world, you know. If you didn't know how to fix a flat tire, you know, everybody laughed at you. You know, and now, you know, you're supposed to be, you know, I hated doing it, but I would just change my own oil and do the spark plugs just to prove that I was a guy. You know, I would much rather go to the garage and be the guy doing it the way everybody would do it now. You know?
Right, right.
So, you know, so I mean, like, that feeling of that kind of world disappearing bothered him, you know, and that's why I found he's really kind of prescient about. He's ahead of the curve in a lot of the things that people are complaining about now, you know, and I think that that's probably one of his great values as a kind of American spokesman, which I think he definitely is. I mean, he's a you know, I'm not making a big case for him, like, you know, he's not Abraham Lincoln or something like that, but, you know, he's somebody who, like, you know, was worth listening to because he was talking from the heart. Which you don't really get that much.
No. You know, one thing struck me as you were talking about the kind of like journalism pre versus internet age and, you know, trying to be the loudest voice in the room. And like, really, like that, to my mind, that's kind of the difference between Bill Cooper and Alex Jones. The kind of thoughtfulness and the kind of that Cooper had as opposed to the kind of like viral. You know, internet age shtick of Alex Jones.
Yeah, well, I think when you listen to Cooper, you're listening at his best. I'm not talking, you know, he had a lot of trashy stuff as well, you know, but I mean, at his best, I mean, like, for instance, with Cooper, you know, he's trying to make a living, he's on the radio. Do you really think that when he was on the, you know, everybody, this stuff, you know, I'm not making a case about his religious thing. But he was broadcasting on the Christian, whatever the name of that place was, the first radio show. It had the reason why he was on there is because it had the biggest transmitter in the country. You know, it wasn't because he was a Christian. He wanted people to hear his stuff. You couldn't be on that. You couldn't be on that unless you know, if Jesus Christ wasn't your personal savior, I mean, you're going to have a hard time, like, you know, being on that station. So, you know, I'm not saying he felt that way or didn't feel that way, but, you know, he has certain things you have to say. But the thing about Cooper, which is different between Alice Jones is reading the script, you know, and he's looking for the most sensational possible thing that he thinks is going to work. And he has really no beliefs, I think. He's just going to go with whatever works, right? Cooper is a guy who's trying to figure out what he thinks. I mean, you can hear him. You can hear him trying to work towards a solution in a lot of these broadcasts when he's trying to figure this idea out, or, you know, you can hear him thinking aloud, which I think is very, you never hear that now. You know, you don't hear Rush Limbaugh thinking aloud, like trying to work out this big problem, I mean, you know, or, you know, any of these guys, MSNBC, I mean, is, you know, and people in where I live, they all listen to MSNBC, and they watch MSNBC all the time. And I say, well, what do I watch this shit for? This is just trash. You know, this is trash. And they said, like, well, you know, what are you talking about? You want to watch Fox News? I said, I can't see the difference between the two. I mean, I'm a journalist. I'm not interested in propaganda. You know, if I want to watch propaganda, I can watch, I can tune into some Russian propaganda. It's probably better than this as propaganda. You know, I can read TASS, you know. Or the Chinese. I mean, I'm not interested in propaganda. I don't care about the future of the Democratic Party or the future of the Republican Party. I'm just hoping that the country is able to survive in a way that is more equitable for everybody, you know? So, and it just the Republic is able to survive, you know? And it seems it's a little dense. It's a little touchy right now, just ask me, you know? For a lot of reasons, you know, ones that, you know, Bill Cooper would agree with and not agree with.
Like, I cracked open Behold a Pale Horse today, and he was reading about, like, Moore and, you know, all these, like, you know, Stan and Friedman and stuff all being CIA agents and things. It seemed to me like he kind of burnt through the UFO community and kind of decided to pivot the Patriot movement, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what the UFO people say. They say that, like, you know, he had no future in the UFO market, so he just went with this other thing that he thought was going to work for him, but you know, because he wanted to be on the radio, you know. But I don't know, you know, I think that Stanton Friedman was a CIA agent? I think that I have to see the papers to believe that. You know, I mean, how could they all be CIA agents? I mean, you know, these are basically, you know, you ever meet any UFO people? Yeah, they're not exactly the kind of people that, like, you know, they're hobbyists in a lot of ways, you know. I mean, you know, and a lot of them are really smart and have a lot of things, interesting things to say. But, I mean, do you particularly believe that Bob Lazar was sitting there watching them what's the name of that? What's that word when they build it backwards?
Reverse engineer. Yeah.
Well, do you think that, I mean, would you be convinced that Bob Lazar was witness to the reverse engineering of alien crafts at Area 51? I mean, is this something that, you know, you can go to the bank with? Or, you know, I mean, it's possible, I suppose. But, I mean, I don't know. You know, I just feel that, and, you know, then so Cooper's saying that Bob Lazar is a CIA agent. I mean, the guy is a fiend for race cars. That's what he was. You know? So I don't know, you know, and I think that, I mean, Cooper was, the thing about him, which is one of the things that I'd like to mention, which is a big deal in the book, is the idea of, like, white people know Bill Cooper basically from the radio show. That's what they know him from. And black people, who make up a big portion of his audience, which I could tell you, because that's the people who are buying this book. You know, the people, like, I have an Instagram account. Most of my followers are hip hop people. You know, those are the people that are really interested in Bill. A lot of those people are the ones that are interested in Bill Cooper because they read Behold the Pale Horse. And, you know, as I try to make a point in the book, Behold the Pale Horse was, and still is, you know, a 30-year-old book. It still is one of the most read books in the American prison system. And one of the reasons for that is, and, you know, there's a million reasons, but one of the reasons was that Cooper gets that Remember when Alex Jones was calling one of his sites a prison planet? Or maybe he still does.
Yeah, I think so. I think he still does, yeah.
He still does. So, like, I mean, the idea of the Earth as a prison in the large scope of the cosmos, you know, that, like, and John Lear, you know, he's the one that says that, you know, the cosmos is filled with all kinds of people, all kinds of entities, you know, and Earth and planets like Earth are prison planets for people that have fallen off the path. It's kind of a half a reincarnation idea, I think. You know, people that have fallen off the path, and you're gonna serve this many times, this many lifetimes on Earth because you did some bad stuff in your previous lives. And I think that when you talk about, and I think Cooper had, he probably didn't really buy into all that, but the idea that he was trapped on Earth and trapped in a bad situation where he didn't have enough control over his future and his life, which is kind of like what his story is about, I think. You know, it's about not being able to control your existence. And so I think if you happen to be in prison in, like, Attica or something like that, you understand that. You know, you get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're... So, I mean, if you walk down 125th Street in New York, which is the main street of Harlem, they have all those booksellers on the street, you know, with the tables and everything.
Yeah.
They're selling those kind of books. Behold the Pale Horse is the big bet. It's still one of the main bestsellers on 125th Street. Still, everybody knows about it. Oh, yeah, Bill Cooper. You're doing a book about Bill Cooper? You know, like, I mean, I didn't have to tell these people who he was. They already knew.
Right.
So, you know, it's just sort of like, so that's kind of, so I ask you a question. How does a big fat guy who lives on a mountaintop in Arizona become incredibly popular on 125th Street in Harlem? How does that work?
That's a mystery. That's the mystery.
Well, that's a mystery, you know?
Rider, third eye of the tiger, see the light and enlightenment or get led to the fire. So let's
ride, ride, ride.
Come meet the Grim Reaper's death supplier, the Pale Horse Rider. Spit that Frankenstein's monster, born in a nightmare while writing this rhyme, swinging my pen like a samurai. William Cooper, our time, magnetic Elohim vision, trapped in a foul system, want to assassinate my rhythm. Political pyramid schemes to the great Giza. Most of y'all already soldiers sold a Google for peanuts. One flew over the cuckoo to flow dilate pupils. Beware the Pale Horse, beware false flag attacks, perception twisting facts. Is it still fake news if fingerprints trace back? Your big brother recording every bar that's birth. Illuminati got the eyes of Mark Jacobson's words. The Pale Horse, the roadmap to spiritual growth. Achieve a higher consciousness, inhaling purple smoke. Now let's ride.
Ride,
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 the Pale Horse Rider.
Welcome to the Hour of the Time. I'm your host, William Cooper.
Alex Jones is a miserable, rotten, little, stinking, cowardly, bold-faced liar. Boy, you know, all of these people ought to know better than to mess with me, because I don't take any crap from anybody. And if I'm not afraid of the whole machinations of the entire government Gestapo, what in the hell makes Alex Jones think that I would ever be afraid of his cowardly little rotten butt? Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to let you know, I verify what you said about that Alex Jones interview. They had it archived on the Internet at one time, and I did hear that interview, and there was nothing wrong with what you did.
And I wasn't thrown off the air, was I?
Not a bit.
No. And that's the only interview I ever did with Alex Jones. As soon as I found out what he was doing and who